Welcome to the Balance Movers and Shakers podcast, the premier podcast for movement professionals and practitioners alike, designed to celebrate creativity and inspire entrepreneurship and practices that promote diversity, inclusion, and accessibility in movement. I'm your host, Ellen Hoffman. Welcome to the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the next episode of the Balance Movers and Shakers podcast. I'm your host, Ellen, and this evening I'm here with Caitlin Sloan. She is a former ballet dancer and the founder of the Brainy Ballerina, which we'll get into some details about what she's working on with this project. But, you know, some things that are really interesting about, you know, being an artist or being in the performing arts realm, and some things that we'll talk about with Caitlin really have to do with how we're learning the business of being an artist, not just fulfilling our passions, but really being able to make a working living out of that and what it really takes to build a career. And so Caitlin has launched a program called the Brainy Ballerina to help instill some basic lessons into young dancers and aspiring ballerinas to help them be better prepared in the world and help prepare instructors who want to give an added dimension to their classes. So join me in welcoming Caitlin. Thanks so much for being here with me this evening.
Thank you for having me.
So talk to us a little bit about your background and, you know, how you got your start in ballet and then where the concept for the Brainy Ballerina came into play.
Sure. Okay. So I started dancing when I was 10 years old in Michigan. I went to a school called Rochester School of Dance. I danced there all through high school. And then I went to college for dance at Grand Valley State University. Got my bachelor's in dance from there. After college, I went and danced with a company called Ballet Tucson for a few years in Arizona. And then after that, I moved to Missouri. It's Missouri Contemporary Ballet for 7 seasons. And then I retired in June 2018. While I was dancing, I also started teaching. So I taught the school at MCB opened in 2011. I started teaching there then. And I taught all through my time in Missouri. I recently moved to Indiana and started teaching at a new school here called Central Indiana Academy of Dance. And so I've just been working primarily as a teaching artist now. And so when I moved to Indiana, at first I hadn't really found a teaching job because I moved here in the middle of the season. So it was a little bit tough and I was really missing that part of my life. And so that's kind of how the Brainy Ballerina was born. I really needed an outlet, I felt like, for all this knowledge that I felt that I wanted to share. And so I just started working on essentially different materials and, you know, flashcards or worksheets or different things that I thought could be beneficial for dancers and teachers who are wanting to really teach their kids more than just the steps, but who want to learn the history, vocabulary, you know, why we do the things that we do in ballet, essentially.
Love that. So I had the privilege of going to an arts high school. And so part of our curriculum, just like you would take, you know, math or science or English, part of our curriculum in dance was to take dance history and lab notation. And so we got some of that foundation. But for those who, you know, are doing an independent study with a studio, how do they typically get that information, or do they not?
Yeah, it's really hard, I think, as a teacher, because there is limited time when you're teaching. You know, if you're in a school such as yourself, there's time built into your day for those extra classes. But when you're teaching students in an hour and a half ballet class, there's only so much time to fit everything in. And so you try to kind of squeeze in tidbits here and there while you're teaching, but it can be tricky. like when I'm teaching my students, I teach them a new step, teach them the vocabulary and definition right away as we learn the new step. So I think vocabulary can be a little bit easier to fit in because you can do it right as you go along. Like even my three-year-olds, they know what plié means. They know what tendu means. You know, we learn it as we learn the step. But for other things like dance history, it's a lot harder to find the time to fit that in. And you kind of might squeeze it in here and there. But again, the students maybe aren't retaining it. It's not as consistent as you'd like it to be. A lot of schools have like a summer program where the students will have a longer day. Well, they'll come from maybe like 9 to 5. And during those times, we try to fit in those extra classes. But again, that's only really once a year for a week or so. You're not really getting all that you need to get. So it can be really hard as a dance educator in a studio setting to find time to make your dancers really well-rounded.
Yeah, so then talk to us a little bit about kind of the inception of the Brainy Ballerina. What sorts of materials are you creating that you think hold the most value for dance instructors and their students?
Sure. I think that the flashcards that go over terminology are very important. It's so important to know the terminology. If you know what a step means, then you know how to execute it better. You know, if you know that frappe means to strike, you can do it better because you understand that it has to be a striking motion. So I think that's really important. I think something that kids can do on their own at home. Like they can go through a flashcard and look at it and say, okay, I need to review my vocabulary. Other things that I have worked on, like a dance history packet, which goes through just like the basics and very, very, not very in depth, you know, just the main points, like when did ballet start? You know, where did it originate? Those kind of things. And where does it come from now? So people understand, I think the kids, they respect ballet more when they know that we've been doing it for hundreds of years. Because I think when you're learning ballet and you're a kid and you have to do pliés again, you can get kind of sick of it. And I think when they realize this isn't something we've been doing for a long, long time, it hasn't changed, you know, it's still important. I think that they start to realize, okay, it's not just because we did your things, we can't do them yet. So I think they start to think, why are we still doing pliés? We should move on. And they start to realize, okay, we have to keep doing these things every single time. It helps to really reinforce that. And I also have worked on, let's see, what else have I developed? Behind the scenes information about different parts of a ballet company. Because again, some kids are gonna be dancers when they grow up, and some might not find that to be their path, and that's okay. But I want them to know that there's other things they can do in the dance world beyond being a ballerina that can still have them be a part of the world, even if they don't feel like dancing is really gonna be their path.
Right. So let's talk about that a little bit. So, you know, I had a really wonderful friend named Kay Bailey, and she was not a dancer. She was a visual artist, and she created a foundation for emerging artists to teach them how to show work and how to get into galleries. It was very valuable for that community because artists are really great at being artists, but not necessarily at showcasing their work or understanding the business components to it. So same kind of goes for dancers, is we're really great at learning choreography, keeping up with our classes, and, you know, following what we think is proper protocol to become dancers, but there's a whole other side of that. So what sorts of skill sets should we be developing in our young dancers now to get them prepared to either go into a dance career or the alternative?
Sure. So as far as skills go that are beyond, you know, just their dancing ability, they need to know basic things like how to write a resume, how to take a headshot, how to do a dance picture. Like whenever you go to audition, they ask for a resume, a headshot, and a first arabesque picture. So you need to know how to do those things and make sure they look nice. You get a lot of, like when I would be doing auditions with my school, I would get a lot of like headshots and first arabesque pictures that were in a living room in their pajamas, you know, and they just didn't know that they need to do that in a studio, in their ballet clothes. to look professional. So even those kind of things, sometimes kids just don't realize that it needs to be professional. So they need to learn that kind of thing. They also need to learn beyond just their dancing technique, their accountability, and their professionalism. Because I think a lot of dancers, they come out of high school or college, and they might have amazing technique, beautiful dancers, but then they go to a company setting and it's very different. And you're really held to a higher standard. You know, before you were paying to take dance classes, and now you're getting paid to be a dancer, and it's a job, and you're not going to get away with things you might have got away with before. It just becomes just a different, like, whole different standard, really, that you have to live up to. And a lot of dancers go into their first year in a company and they don't make it farther than that because they just don't understand the responsibility they need to have. And so I think as a teacher, I want my students to learn that they need to be responsible for their actions, you know, show up every single day to their classes, their rehearsals, prepared, ready to go. You need to be the dancer who's reliable. You know, your boss needs to know that they can depend on you to come into class every day, come into rehearsal every day, and be ready to go. And so I think you can be the best dancer in the world, but if you can't do your job with, you know, responsibility, you're not going to make it very far. So we really try to teach our students that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of etiquette that goes into being in a ballet studio. I think I can remember very clearly getting chewed out one time for yawning in an 8 a.m. class, because it, in the dance world, that shows that you're disinterested in what the instructor is demonstrating.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a whole world of etiquette that goes into the dance studio that, you know, definitely carries into the real world, but there's a way that you carry yourself in the studio. And, you know, we were always taught that it was a performance. Whether you're in the studio or you're on stage, everything is like an audition or like a performance.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true. And it's a good mentality to have, is to treat it like this is performance. Because what you do in the studio is what you're going to do on stage. And I always tell my students that, you know, because sometimes in the studio, they fix their hair, they fix their leotard, they, you know, do a lot of extra fidgeting things. And I tell them, you know, like, you're going to go on stage and you're going to fix your hair. And you're not going to even realize you did it because you're just so used to doing it every day. And you have to just get in the habit of treating every single class rehearsal like a performance. Exactly.
That's exactly right. I mean, you start to build those habits in the studio, you know, even down to some sort of wardrobe malfunction or your hair, you know, falls out of the bun or whatever it is. So that's really interesting. So, you know, when we think about some of the skill sets that we need to really start to instill in our young dancers, what are some tips that you may have for instructors who are really starting to add that secondary dimension into their class? You know, you don't have a lot of time necessarily to be able to go into a full history lesson or rationale behind something. So what are some ways that dance instructors can start to add a secondary dimension onto their existing classes?
I think there's a few different ways you can do it, and it depends what works for you and your students. I think you can first just try to sneak in little tidbits here and there, maybe have like a history fact of the day when the dancers come in, that kind of thing, just to add in maybe just like one little fact each class. You can also, depending on your students and how serious they are, you could start to assign homework. You know, maybe you want your students to learn about classical ballerinas. So you could say, please go research this ballerina and come back and let me know. Next week we'll talk about, you know, what did you learn about her or him and that kind of thing. So start to learn about those things. Because I think a lot of dancers haven't even watched a video of a ballerina. You know, they don't think to go on YouTube always and just like Google American Ballet Theater and just watch a video of professional ballerinas. But it's so important for them to have that background too. So I think, you know, incorporating into class, but also kind of giving them that outside work to do if you feel like that's something that they can handle with their current load. It's really beneficial as well.
That's amazing. Who's your favorite ballerina?
Probably Tyler Peck.
Amazing. Amazing. So talk to me a little bit, you know, you've been teaching for a long time. What has surprised you over the years with how the industry has changed and what you've noticed, you know, going from learning to a professional environment where you were dancing in companies and now going into teaching? How's that evolution changed and what surprised you about it the most?
I think the industry is definitely getting harder. I think it is. The standards are rising every single year. I see my students now being able to do things that I don't think that I could have done at their age, or that I wasn't expected to do at their age, I should say. And, you know, companies just are looking for more. Now, dancers don't just get to do classical ballet. They have to do contemporary. They have to be well-rounded. If you aren't well-rounded, you're not going to get the parts, you know, and you're not going to get the job. And so you just have to learn so many more styles of movement than they used to have to, I really feel. And there's just so many talented dancers. And I think there's keeps being more and more. And so the competition is really stiff. And that's another thing that I tell my students a lot, you know, because we work a lot on our details. Because I feel like that's one really important thing when you're a company director and you're doing an audition and you see you're going to go to audition and you're going to have probably five other girls who are exactly the same as you technically. But if you can show that you understand the details in the combination, you're going to get the job because they don't want to spend time working on, you know, where your arms are every single time. They want to know that they can just show it to you one time and you're going to have it and that's all that's going to happen. And so I feel like I really try to impress upon my students that it's more than just being able to do the turns and the jumps. It's being able to pick up on the tiny little details that make you stand out to a director.
How are you teaching them that?
I really don't let them get away with not doing it. Like if I show them a combination, I show them the arms full out, I show them the steps full out. And then if we go and we do the combination and they don't do it, we go back and we talk about it because I don't want them just to get into a habit of just going through the motions. And I think a lot of the time there are certain port-a-bras that we use for certain steps that are really common. And so they always want to do that same port-a-bras, which is a movement of the arms. And so I try to do more unexpected movements of the arms so that it forces them to have to think about it and not just do what they would always do, so that they can have that thought process when they're doing combinations that are new, they can pick it up faster and learn those details.
It's interesting. No marking in Caitlin's class.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about styles of dance. You know, obviously modern and contemporary have really taken the dance world by storm in the last, you know, couple of decades, and it really has opened doors for a diverse range of bodies and different types of movements outside of what we've historically learned in ballet. So, you know, when we're thinking about creating a well-rounded dancer, what is coming to the surface and what styles of dance, what sorts of conditioning does, you know, a dancer need nowadays to really be competitive in the market?
It really depends what their goals are as a dancer. I think that if you're in a studio setting, typically growing up, you're taking ballet, jazz, contemporary, and tap. A lot of studios don't actually really offer strict modern classes. I feel like my first modern class was probably in college when I started doing, you know, Graham technique and that kind of thing. I never really was exposed to that in a consistent way when I was a kid. I do think studios are starting to introduce that a lot sooner, but it wasn't always the norm. It was more of like a lyrical contemporary style versus the more structured modern classes. But it really just depends what your goals are, you know, because every single company that you want to go dance for is going to have a different style and different aesthetic. And some might really value if you have some more like hip hop movement, you know, or if you can tap, or if you have better contemporary movement. The more styles you have proficiency in, the better your chance of getting a job. So I really think that a lot of dancers really just want to focus on ballet. And I think that's great. I think that's really important. But I just don't want them to get pigeonholed into, I'm just a ballerina, because that doesn't exist anymore in the dance world.
Yeah, no, and ballet gives you a foundation for everything else. You learn pliés in ballet and you adapt them to other styles of movement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So then let's talk a little bit about non-dance careers. You know, there's obviously teaching. What else is on the horizon for dancers, you know, once they complete their dance career?
Sure. I think a lot of dancers, once they retire, really do still feel drawn to be involved in the dance world in some way. And so I've had a lot of friends after they retired who become photographers and do dance photography, which is great because they have an eye for it. And it can be really hard to photograph dance if you don't really know what it's supposed to look like. So I think that's wonderful. I've had friends who've gone on to become makeup artists who work with dancers, choreographers. There's so many different things that you can do. Physical therapists, you know, it just kind of depends on what your passion is, where you feel you're invested. But then I have friends who, once they've retired, don't want anything to do with dance. They, you know, it can be hard, like when you've been so invested in being a dancer for such a long time, to still be involved in it without being on stage. And so some people that I know just have gone completely different career paths and not even stayed in that industry because it just wasn't the right fit for them. And so I think every single person is going to be different in that aspect.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I mean, when you've invested, you know, decades into something that can be very physically taxing on your body, or even mentally or emotionally taxing at times, mm-hmm. You know, I can definitely imagine some people opt to leave it behind, you know, in a prior life for themselves. Yeah. I want to talk about, the life cycle of a dancer, because I think that that has changed from what it used to be, even in the 80s, to now. You know, I think people have longer dance careers, there's more opportunity. You know, I think body type has shifted some, and, you know, obviously there's physical and technical ability that still has to be there. But talk us through kind of the life cycle of a dancer and some of the trends that you've seen, you know, over the last couple of years that have shifted.
Yeah, I feel like, well, it used to be that you started dancing sooner. So I feel like a lot of professional careers usually took off historically, you know, 16, 17, 18, you started dancing professionally. And then you might finish in your 20s, early 30s. But now a lot of dancers go to college. And that was not very common. There weren't a lot of college dance programs. Even when I was graduating from high school in 2006, and I was wanting to go to college, my dance teacher wasn't super pleased with that. She really wanted me just to go to a company. She said I was ready. She thought I should go to a company and just not do college, because she couldn't, with her background, she couldn't understand how that would be beneficial. You know, she just, that was not something that you did as a dancer in her era. And so, but to me, I just wasn't ready. I knew emotionally more than anything that I wasn't ready to go straight into the working force. I wanted to go to college. And so I made that choice. That meant that I didn't start dancing professionally until I was 21. And so it does kind of make your career a little bit shorter, but I think a lot of dancers are now going to college and then they are dancing a little bit longer. And there are a few reasons why I think dancers are dancing longer. One is because we have better knowledge about the human body now, and like companies are getting better resources. You know, a lot of companies have physical therapists on staff. They have a medical team who can see you, which wasn't always the case before. And I think a lot of times, in the past, you know, if you were injured, you would just go take some medicine and get on stage again. Like, you wouldn't really get rehabbed. And now we have a better understanding of the human body and what we need to do to take care of it. So there is more longevity there. And I also think because of the way the dance world is now, a lot of people are doing their dance career and maybe they're with a company for so long. And then after they finish dancing with the company, they might go freelance, which is so much easier to do now with the internet and social media. And that kind of thing. You can find gigs, you know, around the world, really, where before it was like you were in a company and that was really your job. It wasn't as easy to go out and do these extra kind of gigs that were maybe outside of your norm or just past your prime when you want to be in a company kind of thing, because being a company is really taxing. It's full time. And so at a certain point in your career, you might say, okay, I don't really want to do this full time anymore, but I don't want to give it up completely. So I'll just pick up some like side gigs and keep doing it in that way. So I think that really has changed with social media and the way that we have access to these kind of opportunities now.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I see a lot of older dancers that I've followed for some time. Julie Kent was always one of my favorite ballerinas. And I believe she's leading the Washington Ballet now. And so, you know, there is opportunity for dancers who have, you know, made a career for themselves to go into being artistic directors and, you know, company leads, and certainly traveling dancing is, and the gig economy with artists as a whole has really come to a surface and is really blossoming, which is, So what's something that has really surprised you over the course of your career?
That's a good question. I think that over the course of my career, nothing is really what you expect it to be. You have, I think, as a young dancer, when you're growing up, you have a very specific idea of what you think your career is going to look like. And then you actually do it and you realize that you really can't control a lot of things. And your life is going to take turns and you're going to have to figure it out, because dance is not the kind of career that is easy in any way. Not that any career is easy, but dance just requires so much of yourself. It really takes everything that you have, emotionally and physically, every single day. And so you come home from work every day and you're completely drained. And so it can be hard to establish relationships, to have a social life. Those kind of things can be difficult. And I think that as you do start to grow up and you start to, you know, maybe you want to get married or have kids or that kind of thing, like, for other careers, it might not make as big of a difference, but for dance, it can really change everything about your career. You know, if you want to have a baby, it can really affect if you want to go back to dancing or not afterwards and how you're going to manage that as an athlete. And so I think that that really surprised me as a dancer, because I couldn't imagine those things when I was a young kid. But as, you know, growing up, I realized that you have to, at a certain point, make choices if you really want to pursue the career. You can't have everything in life. And at some point, I think that's okay. I think a lot of dancers do make choices where they say, I can't have everything. I have to make a choice of what is more important to me at this stage in my life. And it changes as you age and as you go through your career. So you have to kind of just acclimate and readjust and rethink what's important to you every step of the way.
No, that makes sense. You know, being a dancer is one of the most physically strenuous jobs that you can have. So anything that adds to that emotional or that physical pressure, whether it's, you know, having a child or going through some sort of life milestone, certainly affects that. So that makes complete sense. Talk to us a little bit about company life and what that's like on the day to day for those who are listening that aren't necessarily dancers.
Sure. I mean, it varies based on the company, but for me at Missouri Contemporary Ballet, our day started at 9 a.m. We had company class every morning, a ballet class for an hour and a half, and then we would go into rehearsals. We would do that until 3. And then so this company was a little bit different. A lot of companies have rehearsals later in the day, and they have weekend rehearsals. We were really lucky that we had a Monday through Friday 9-to-3 schedule, which really allowed us to have other jobs and teaching opportunities and that kind of thing during the week. And then our weekends free, which isn't really the norm for a lot of companies. But that worked for us and for our company. So we would rehearse, from, you know, 11:30 to 3 every single day. And then you have performances throughout the year. We would always do two at performances, one in November and one in the spring. And then we usually do a full-length ballet in June. And so throughout the year, you're just working on all of your different ballets. And then usually you have the summers off. Most dancers do. You're off usually from like July and August and come back in September and start working again. So that's typically how your day goes.
Amazing. So let's talk a little bit more about the Brainy Ballerina and, you know, some of the lessons that you have created for dance teachers like yourself that are hoping to infuse a little bit more of ballet history or ballet terminology into their classes. So talk to us a little bit about some of the lessons that you've created and really what that can help kind of instill in students and why that's really important. Because obviously ballet terminology is very important, but there's some historical aspects that are extremely important for us to understand as we're building that foundation as dancers, and especially as young dancers, to understand the origins and then see it for what it is in this day and age.
Sure. And yeah, so one resource that I have is called the Brainy Ballerina's Guide to Classical Ballets. And so it goes through a few different classical ballets and just one page for each ballet, you know, the Nutcracker, and it's summed up in it. One page, you know, main characters, you know, when it premiered, the synopsis, some fun facts, just a little bit of background, because I think a lot of times, especially if you aren't maybe as training as a ballerina, maybe you're training more in a different genre, you might never have even seen the Nutcracker, you know, and so you don't really know a lot about it, but it's so important for dancers to have that understanding of classical ballets or the Sleeping Beauty or Swan Lake, all these ballets that if you do join a classical company, you will end up performing. And so you need to have some idea about them. And I think that's really important for dancers to, you know about these ballets that have been around for such a long time that we're still dancing. You know, there's a reason why we keep performing the classical ballets. So that's so important for dancers. And I think that this just kind of helps them learn about it in one place. Because really what I found when I was looking for resources that I wanted to use is that I couldn't find anything that was really succinct. It was very lengthy a lot of the time or not very organized information, and I just wanted it to be one page, easy to read, because I feel like that's really, as a dance teacher, all the time you're gonna get sometimes. And just in this current time, you know, we're so used to instant gratification, people aren't gonna sit and read a whole book about it. You know, you just need to be able to give them information quickly, the main points. And you'll have some students who are, you know, really, really invested who want to go learn more. But for your general population, that's really the amounts that they're going to, you know, be able to focus on. And so that's what I was really trying to find. It's just very easy to use, but still helpful materials that teachers could implement in their classrooms, you know, tomorrow. Doesn't mean like you don't have to do a lot of background work. You just have to print off this worksheet, take it to your students. And, you know, for instance, like my guide to ballet history, it comes with one that is filled in with the information and one that's blank. So students can have like a quiz. So once they've learned information, they go and they take a quiz and they fill in the information that you've taught them. So you have an opportunity to make sure you, you know, they really are implementing what you're teaching them.
Amazing. No, that's super helpful. And I think, you know, learning about classical ballets really put some of the technique that you learn into practice. You know, when you're practicing an attitude, for example, and you're practicing it at the bar or you're practicing it in center, you're almost detached from where it was performed originally or where it originated from. So when you're practicing a variation or you're practicing, you know, from one ballet to the next, it really puts those different positions into practice and gives you some context. So that's, you know, it's really nice that you've created this program for people to learn about.
Absolutely. And I think that students really do want to know the why behind what they're doing. You know, they don't just, I mean, all of us do, I think, when we have a task to do, we want to know what's the purpose of this task. And so if the students can understand that, yeah, we do need to learn this step because it's going to be in Swan Lake. You're going to have to do bourrées if you want to be a swan. You know, so it's not just like, oh, we're just doing this to do this every single day. You know exactly where it's going to be implemented in your life. I think it helps to give you that extra motivation you need on maybe those tough days, you know, or when you just really need a little bit of a boost. I think that always helps.
Yeah, no, I agree. So where can people find some more information about the Brainy Ballerina? And where can they order these materials?
Sure. So if you go on Etsy, my shop is on Etsy, the Brainy Ballerina. I also have an Instagram page and a Facebook page, the same handle, the Brainy Ballerina. So you can find out information from all of those sources.
Amazing. And we'll put the links to your Etsy shop and your Instagram in the show notes at the end of this. So Caitlin, before we sign off, what is one takeaway that you want our listeners to go away with and take away from you?
I just want, I think because your podcast is, you know, based on just different people doing different physical activities, right? Like essentially this is the premise is how physical activity can help us in our daily lives and the importance of it. And I think I just want people to know that, you know, if they ever want to do ballet, that they should try it. Whether you're, you know, young or an adult, I think ballet is an amazing art form that anyone can do at any age. And I really encourage people to try it out.
No, I agree. I take an adult ballet class and some of the women in there are definitely over 40, over 50, over 60. And then there's, you know, younger people like myself that are in their 20s and 30s. So it's definitely a timeless art form. And, you know, there's an opportunity for anyone who wants to dance to dance.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you so much for being with me this evening and taking your time out and for creating these wonderful materials.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Balance Movers and Shakers podcast. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And check out our website for the latest blog posts from our Balance Movement community. If you're interested in sharing your story, drop us a line at our contact us form on our site. Signing off.